Talking Heads from the Chartered Institute of Internal Auditors.
Good morning, Ruth. Just so you're all aware, I'm Liz Sandwith and I am the Chartered Institute's Chief Professional Practice Advisor. And today I'm very lucky to be able to spend some time talking to Ruth Lowry, who is Head of Internal Audit for Lancashire County Council. So Ruth, could you give us a little bit of a feel about why you decided on a career in internal audit and why particularly local government?
Certainly. I'd done quite a lot of internal audit throughout my career with PricewaterhouseCoopers before I joined Lancashire County Council. But when the opportunity came up to work here some years ago now, it was one I really couldn't turn down. Firstly, it was very much a personal move because I live within walking distance, and having had to commute for many years over very long distances, that was a real relief. But it's actually also lovely to be able to work for the county in which I live and have lived for most of my life, and to work in public service for the county too. Local government is quite a peculiar environment, and even now, after I have to confess, 14 years, there's still a lot that I'm learning about local government. The County Council is actually one of the biggest local authorities in the country. There are four or five of similar scale, although things are changing at the moment, as listeners may be aware. It's particularly complicated because we have 12 district councils as well as Lancashire County Council in the same geography, and two unitaries as well, unitary authorities in Blackburn and Blackpool. So the relationships between those organisations just on local government are quite complicated, and we then have even more complicated relationships with various NHS bodies in the area too. So it's quite a complicated environment. But that is because of the breadth of work that we do in local government. The County Council, as all county councils, has a huge range of activity. We look after children, fostering, adoption, residential care, all sorts of statutory services, children with special educational needs and disabilities. We work with schools. The schools across the county are funded through the County Council, so we employ thousands of teachers. The budget for children's care pales into insignificance relative to adult social care, where we do an awful lot of work supporting vulnerable adults, adults of working age with autism and other educational needs or disabilities, but also an enormous and growing number of elderly residents of the county who need support. And then there's the potholes. The roads, the bridges, the highways infrastructure of the county all falls down to Lancashire County Council. Public health, we recently took over responsibility for that a couple of years ago. So things like sexual health contracts, school nursing, all sorts of drug prevention schemes, a range of things there.
And Ruth, are all those areas that you are responsible for auditing?
And more.
Gosh, so a very, very wide remit.
Absolutely, yeah. It's quite a tough judgment as to what we audit and how we audit it, given some limited resources, and we may talk about that later. But yeah, it is a very tough call, not least because in the public sector, we have to give an overall, or I personally have to give an overall opinion about the frameworks of governance, risk management and internal control for the County Council as a whole. And obtaining the evidence to support that opinion is quite tough.
Yeah. So the skill set then of you educate them in terms of the remit of Lancashire County Council, or do you tend to recruit from within the council so they have a knowledge of the council and then train them to be internal auditors?
Interesting question, that one. In recent years, we've followed the second course, which has been really positive. I've taken in quite a number of people from around the County Council who've brought a wealth of experience and years of experience of working for the county, but with no experience whatsoever of internal audit. So that does bring its own challenges. That's actually, it has been a very, very positive thing, and I really can't stress that enough, but actually it hasn't been by choice. It's been because we are extremely financially straitened at the moment, and there's been a policy decision that is the way any post across the county will be filled as a priority just to save on redundancy costs. But it has been a really useful boost to the knowledge and skill sets too within the team, but a challenge to develop the skill sets of internal auditors. Put quite a lot of pressure on the longer standing members of the team too.
Yes, I can imagine it must have done. And I would guess there are a variety of different schools of thought that say internal audit, basic common sense, you know, apply a bit of knowledge and you'll be able to do a really good job. There are others that say, no, you need 4, 5, 6 years of experience before you are a competent internal auditor. So does that present challenges for you as well?
It does. And with all things, the balance is somewhere in between. And I would prefer to be able to take in next time some more experienced internal auditors. But again, I can't stress enough, you know, the value that the people have brought that have joined the team fairly recently. And we are making very good internal auditors of them. I think, though, we're facing a challenge of productivity, where there are actually very few of us, and it would be good to be able to work faster and harder, and that will come with time, but it's a challenge at the moment.
So in terms of your internal audit team, your function, how many internal auditors do you have?
Aha, there's the rub. At the moment we are just 16, which when you consider the breadth of what we need to cover is most decidedly a challenge. It's probably the biggest one that I face as head of internal audit. It is arguably not enough.
No. And I would guess with the breadth of the remit that you talked about early on, and only 16, the ability to provide that opinion around governance, risk management, and internal controls that you mentioned at the beginning must be really quite challenging.
Absolutely, it is. At the moment, though, management themselves wouldn't want to give any more than limited assurance over governance and internal control, which actually takes me some way towards reducing the resources I need to support an equivalent opinion. It would be slightly perverse of me to aim for anything more than the assurance that management are willing to give. Mm. And that enables me to say, for example, and this is a tricky one, but for example, our children's services are subject to all sorts of improvement measures imposed by Ofsted a couple of years ago when the children's services were deemed to be, in some respects, inadequate. So we've actually largely avoided treading too closely to a large range of the children's services that we provide.
Because they're already under a process of improvement. And then I guess when they have delivered that improvement programme, then you would be able to go in and provide an audit and some assurance in terms of whether those improvements have worked.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Yes. So in terms of putting together your annual plan, do you adopt a similar approach to your colleagues in private sector, financial services sector, central government?
As in risk-based?
Yes.
Absolutely, yes. Very much. We've had a lot of conversations with the corporate management team and various directors and heads of service beneath them too, to assess where they think we face the greatest risks, but also the risks that have been subjected to the greatest degree of control. It would be nice to provide all sorts of consultancy advice where risks are deemed still not to be quite under control. But actually, if we go right down to brass tacks of what assurance we can provide, it's probably best focused on the areas where managers think things are under control and would themselves say, yes, we are happy with that, but actually they just need testing.
Okay. So when you talk about management, are you talking about them as a first line of defence in terms of the three lines of defence model? And therefore, do you also have a second line, a risk, a financial control oversight functions?
There are parts of the organisation that have second lines of defence, particularly children's services, actually. But that's mixed. The risk function is actually very well organised as a process, but fairly slimly resourced, so we don't have a great deal of a function there at the second line.
Okay.
And the same goes for a number of other areas.
And your reporting line is to?
It's actually to the Director of Resources at the moment, but it's also, with a dotted line, to our Chief Executive, who is also what we call the Section 151 officer. That is the statutory responsible officer, the person with statutory responsibility for finance and the council's financial position. So I do have access directly to her if I need it, and actually we do meet regularly. Okay.
So that's slightly different to a lot of the other models where the head of internal audit would report directly to the chair of the audit committee in terms of a reporting line with perhaps, to use my language, pay and rations into the CEO might be another way of looking at it.
Yes, to a degree, though, what we've got here reflects the fact that the chair of the Audit, Risk and Governance Committee is actually an elected member. As it happens, he is a former accountant from Preston City Council, but we're not always so lucky to have somebody with that sort of background. They're always intelligent and interested, but not necessarily holding the right skill base. I do have the opportunity to speak with the chair of the committee whenever I wish, and he likewise, you know, can speak to me.
Okay. So do you have a charter, an internal audit charter that they approve, and an annual plan that they approve?
Absolutely. All the usual stuff still applies here. So yes, we have a charter that I review regularly, and we have an annual plan supported by a strategy. That's really just the wordy bits, so we don't have to bore members with lots of detail. I give regular performance reports to the Audit, Risk and Governance Committee, and I'm about to prepare the annual report under the same professional practice framework that everybody else has to use.
Do you find that there are challenges for you reporting into your CEO in terms of your independence? Is there a risk that the CEO might try to persuade you to go particular areas and avoid other areas?
Clearly there is a risk, yes, and the mitigation of that is very much reliant on the professional standing and stature of the chief executive.
And I guess your relationship.
Yes, yes.
A relationship of mutual respect, and I guess, I hope, the CEO sees you as their trusted advisor.
Yes, absolutely. And although our chief executive is actually very new in post at the moment and is only an interim post, she is actually an accountant by background, which is why she's able to pick up the finance element of that role as well as the chief executive main role.
Okay. And when you started, you mentioned, I think, 12 district councils and some NHS and other things in terms of bodies outside of your Lancashire County Council body. Do they have internal audit functions, and do they report into you, or do you have access to their work?
The easy, straightforward answer is yes, in principle, but in practice, each set of internal auditors and each organisation has got such enormous challenges at the moment that, to be honest, it's something we need to work on, but no, we're not doing enough by way of sharing assurance at the moment. In my defence, some of that actually reflects the position that we're in as a county, where we're aiming to form a combined authority, such as that in Manchester, which people may have heard of nationally. But at the moment, the politics aren't working terribly well. It is something that all the leaders of the various local authorities are trying to work on, but haven't quite got there yet. And it doesn't help that the NHS boundaries are not all coterminous with the same geographies that we work on as well. So it has been quite a challenge.
Yes, it must be. So perhaps some of our listeners will be private sector, and they will be familiar with organisations where you have subsidiary companies located across the globe. So the district councils are not sort of subsidiary companies of...
Not at all. No. Fiercely independent, with their own elected members and their own agendas. So it's very much political negotiations are required, really, to make anything happen effectively. We do have operational activity that relies on cooperation between the districts and the county, and amongst the districts too. But for any sort of further developments on that, we're treading very heavily into political territory there.
And we must avoid political territory. So does the district council's internal audit functions provide a potential pool of internal auditors for you to recruit from, or again, do they keep very separate?
We actually work together. There is a Lancashire District Audit Group, as we call it, where, you know, we get together quite regularly, at least quarterly, to share notes. And as it happens, we provide an internal audit function for, in its entirety, one of the districts, but also support to at least four of the others. It waxes and wanes a little. And I'd be delighted if any of them were willing to join us, but I'd be equally delighted if we were able to recruit externally, which, as I mentioned earlier, is actually a problem here.
Yes.
It's not an option at the moment.
No. So cost constraints are a challenge. What other sort of challenges do you face, perhaps apart from what we've talked about?
Well, actually, cost constraints are the single biggest challenge to the County Council, and it obviously has an impact in terms of what I can do and the scale of my team. But whilst we've managed to set a budget for the year that's just begun, and we are expecting to be able to set a legal budget for the following year too, actually the year after that we are some £90 million short, and the year after that it's over £140 million short. Again, listeners may be aware of what's recently happened to Northamptonshire County Council, and they are not in the long term going to be alone, unfortunately. So that is the single biggest risk, as yet unmitigated, for the County Council as a whole.
And that sounds a fairly significant risk that will be a bit like perhaps a pebble in a pond, and will have ripples that will affect everyone, including internal audit.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. And okay. That situation has been going on for some time.
Okay. What about recruitment? Of one of the things that a lot of our members talk about is the challenge in relation to recruiting IT auditors. So is that a challenge that you also have?
It was. But notwithstanding the budgetary constraints we're under, I have had permission, and I'm just in the middle of procuring an IT audit service from wherever, but certainly external to the County Council, because in common with a lot of people I've recognised, I'm not going to be able to recruit and retain and train adequate IT audit expertise. So I shall just be effectively co-sourcing for that very narrow aspect, but very important.
And have you done co-sourcing before?
No, not on this side of the fence anyway. In my previous career with PricewaterhouseCoopers, I provided support and fully outsourced internal audit services, but I haven't been in the position of having to procure and manage an external.
Do you anticipate, in terms of the co-sourcing arrangement, that you will be able to exchange knowledge and experience with your co-source provider and your internal audit team, with an opportunity perhaps to grow the knowledge within the team?
Certainly, that is a hope and expectation, and it will be in selecting our partner in due course. Remains to be seen, you know, how much we can make of that, particularly given that the very small numbers of people we've actually got. It would be lovely to be able to really develop the knowledge of people within the team, not least with respect to things like data analytics. You know, we already use IDEA as a software tool, but probably not nearly as much as we should. So if there is knowledge in particular on that we can gain from an external partner, then I would be very welcoming of that.
Yeah. And data analytics, as you've mentioned, is a real skill that internal auditors are coming to terms with, I think, at the moment. I think that they are struggling, a lot of our colleagues, in terms of really seeing the value add in the first instance, but also the breadth of use of data analytics in their organisations.
Absolutely, yes. And we've recognised the value, but really haven't gone any further than that to any great degree as yet.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an opportunity there to pursue.
Okay. So you talked at the beginning about 14 years at Lancashire County Council, and you talked about being at PwC before that. If you, in your mind, think about the two worlds, what were the best things about both?
Oh, heavens. I loved my time at PricewaterhouseCoopers. It was excellent experience, a real challenging environment to grow, to learn, and to get a really solid basis for the career I've now got. But as I mentioned very selfishly, there are some good personal reasons for being at the County Council. And it's been fantastic to be able to get a lot deeper into the organisation. It's a challenging organisation, as I think I've probably conveyed. So despite rather wryly recognising how long I've been here, it still has a lot to offer. And I hope I've still got a lot to offer the county too. But it's an exciting place to be at the moment, if somewhat challenging.
One of the things that we talk a lot about at the Institute is our charter status, which gives us a responsibility to act in the public interest. I guess potentially you're closer to that and the ability to deliver that remit of being a member of the Institute.
Very much so. I think the role here is fundamentally one of public service, as opposed to something that it's wouldn't say it was a nice to have, but you don't always get the opportunity in the private sector, certainly not within PricewaterhouseCoopers, to really go right to the heart of the value to the public, what I and my team are doing here, and indeed what the whole organisation does. And fundamentally, my role is ultimately reporting to the stakeholders for the County Council, to the public. So, yes, everything I do is in the public interest. The Chartered Institute actually is proving a really good support at the moment to me and to the service I run here in the development of the training, and we're certainly very hopeful of the apprenticeships that are going to be on offer. But certainly the team are very interested, having, as I've said, come in with minimal or no experience of internal audit. So I've actually got some people who are very keen to take up the training opportunities that I'm hoping to be able to provide through the Institute.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, that's good to hear in terms of the support that the Institute is providing to you, and you as a member, of course, providing support to the Institute by engaging with us in our training and the work that we do in terms of guidance, etc. So thinking about your role as the head of internal audit, one of the challenges that has come through in a lot of our EQAs, our external quality assessments, is that the quality of the internal audit plan is perhaps not as robust as it might be. Do you have challenges with that? Could you walk us through your planning process?
Yes, certainly. I've already mentioned that it is risk-based, so I have had, rather, I and the audit managers who work with me have had a lot of conversations with the directors, the corporate management team, heads of service around the council. We do actually have quite a good risk management process here, so we've been able to look at the service risk registers and the corporate risk register. I've accessed other bits of information too. Obviously, the budget and numbers of staff employed gives us some indication of where we might wish to focus on top of all of that. So we shake it all around, and I'll be discussing that more formally with the corporate management team just next week, actually, get their views on where we might best focus our attention. So I'd like to think that it's probably more of an art than a science, but nonetheless, we will have a properly risk-based plan as best we can. It will not cover everything it would be good to cover. I have to accept that, but it does mean that we need to focus resources very carefully, and we'll be all the sharper for that.
And when you present your plan to the audit committee, the fact that you have spoken to the corporate management team and had some engagement and dialogue there, does that convince the audit committee, the audit risk and governance committee, to accept your plan and approve it almost without much discussion? Or is there still a degree of challenge and pushback and requests for other audits?
It's hard to say. With every change of administration, political administration, the committee changes. So this will be only the second time that this committee has had to go through this process, and the first time was actually the very first time they met as a committee. So I'm going to struggle to generalise. By and large, in my experience, the committee members will take an interest in what we do. They may challenge it, and we do have some good members on the committee at the moment, but they will, I am sure, take a lot of assurance from the fact that the management team have been involved already, and I hope will be supportive of it.
Yes, and do you do this sort of, if I had a blank check and unlimited resources, these are the other areas I would like to cover, when you have that dialogue with your audit committee chair, so that they understand almost the compromise that the cash constraints have enforced on you?
I'm certainly going to have that discussion with the corporate management team. I think I'll probably present something a little bit more finalised, but I will be bringing their attention to the fact we have had to prioritise, and there will be things that will change during the year as issues arise or other things are resolved in different ways.
So 2018, 2019, we've just moved into 2018, haven't we? The new financial year, the new audit plan year. What do you see as your keeping you awake at night challenges in the coming year, do you think?
Heavens. For the County Council as a whole, it has got to be effecting some cost savings, ultimately. There may be an element of income generation, but to be perfectly honest, it's cost savings. And I would like us to be able to audit ideally the way those cost savings have come about, but at the very least I'm going to want to keep a close eye on how we're managing the achievement of them. That is the single biggest issue.
Okay. And are your team on side with that, and do they consider those constraints through every audit they do, look for cost savings, look how cost savings are being managed and controlled, whether they're compromising your internal control framework because they've cut staff or whatever?
It's fair to say that I think just about every employee who's anywhere near the corporate core, and that certainly includes us, is very alive to the position that we're in. And I'd like to think that the team were very much thinking along those lines. Certainly, over the years, I and the audit managers have tried to impress on the whole team that really we should be moving away from the traditional internal audit, let's put another control in place response, through to really, do you need to do that control? But what are going to be the implications if you stop doing it?
Yes. I know one of the organisations I worked for, we moved away from findings and recommendations to observations, which we then said to management, how would you come up with a solution to address this, to encourage greater ownership?
I am grinning all over my face at this point because that is exactly what I've been impressing on the team, and the team really have got it. We all wince when anyone uses the term recommendation these days.
Yes.
Because we are very keen that, you know, we don't have all of the answers. Given, I say again, the breadth of the work that the County Council does, there is no way we can be experts in all of those things. So really we need to be facilitators. Mm-hmm. And we bring an understanding of risk and control, but we really need to apply that to managers' own much deeper knowledge of what they do, how they do it, and the implications if it transpires there are risks as yet unmitigated. So, yeah, we talk about action plans, not recommendations.
I also found, and I don't know whether you have as well, that the engagement to implement agreed actions is much stronger when the action has come from management of the area that you've audited, rather than you go in and say, this is what internal audit recommends, now go away and do it. So this other organisation that I worked for previously, we managed to reduce significantly the number of outstanding overdue action implementation.
Absolutely, that's what we're aiming for.
Yeah, yeah. I think that makes a massive difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good. So we're coming to the end of our allotted time, and I just wondered, Ruth, if there was anything else that you would like to share with our listeners in terms of your internal audit experience, the future of internal audit as you see it, and just your pearls of wisdom you might like to share.
That's asking a bit much. I would pick up on what I said really about the training side and what the Institute is doing. I am very appreciative that the Institute is taking an interest in the public sector, and think you've got a lot to offer to people working in the public sector by way of supporting what we do and really bringing some rigour to it. I would also just want to say, in terms of local government, these are extremely challenging times, but actually very rewarding professionally. The sort of challenges I'm facing here and have faced over the last few years have been incredible, but in a very personally rewarding and developmental way. It's fun and interesting place to work.
It's interesting to hear you say that, because I think, you know, some of our colleagues in the private sector or the financial services sector will think that they have unique challenges, which they do, but that they're above and beyond anything that central government or local government might experience, where I think there is still that sort of comfort zone. You know, people come in at 9, they go at 4, all of that sort of fairly straightforward type of work. But judging from what you said this morning, that is definitely not the case.
I agree.
Oh, thank you very much, Ruth. And hopefully we'll be able to have another one of these conversations. Perhaps we can have one later on this year to reflect how your plan is going and how your engagement with management is going and how you're managing your cost constraints.
That would be interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you for downloading Talking Heads from the Chartered Institute of Internal Auditors.